You have arrived at your destination.
Seen a Switch drop?
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, all the Joy-Cons shoot off of it. You're like, oh, God! No! What just happened?
No!
Hoss, what time is it?
It's time to eat sandwiches.
Is it? Is that what we did?
No.
All right, get out of here, Barnabas. Get out of here. Gotta get the dog out of here.
It's dog day.
It's dog day over here at the
dog day afternoon
at the Video Destruct Studio. Anyway, but it's time for the Video Destruct Podcast.
Hey!
We're doing, and we're back with the Video Destruct Podcast, and we're talking the Game Boy Advanced.
Yeah,
today we're talking about the Game Boy Advanced.
One of the greatest, if not the greatest, handhelds of all time.
That's a bold statement.
For it to have been alive for a relatively short window, like 4 years.
Sure.
That thing had banger after banger after banger. Amazing re-releases in a time when re-releases, especially from Nintendo, were not very common.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, here's all the best Mario games on this thing.
That's
and they're
fair.
Great versions of them.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, and A Link to the Past, and with this awesome Four Swords Adventure thing where you can use the Link cable and all play together and all... Tons of crazy shit.
Yeah, not counting like the revamps of the system itself, the SP, the Micro, all that stuff. Is that the longest lasting system, like our handheld system?
No.
Handheld system? No, really?
No, it's one of the shortest.
Really?
For Nintendo, I mean, think about it. Like
yeah.
The original Game Boy was about almost 11 years.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's counting Game Boy Pocket and Color
yeah.
as one thing.
Right, because it's still the same hardware. So.
Yeah, effectively.
Effectively,
and
yeah.
Now, the Game Boy Advance is really only viable from 2001 when it came out
mm-hmm.
until 2004.
Right.
When the DS came out. Now, yeah, like, Square was still releasing those, like, Final Fantasy re-releases and stuff like that in 2005. And I think the Final Fantasy VI re-release didn't come out until 2006. But effectively, they were the only people that were still doing it. And the only reason they were still releasing those
right.
was because the original DS and the DS Lite were backwards compatible with those cartridges.
Right.
So they knew that they could still play to that audience.
Right, yeah.
And not have to make a DS version of that thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was just a hot thing that got disrupted by the third pillar.
Yeah.
And also... Nintendo had to do something. You couldn't be out there with something that was effectively a Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
When Sony was launching the PSP, which I know we all look at it differently now.
Right.
When the PSP came out, everybody looked at that as, well, fuck Nintendo.
Right, yeah, it's true.
And then everybody saw those loading times and
yeah.
realized they didn't necessarily want to play, like, home games on the go.
Yeah.
When you couldn't really suspend stuff very well with short battery life. And the Switch is proving a lot of that wrong.
Yeah.
But the Switch is also a home system.
Right, yeah. So it's kind of
so
both, yeah.
It's kind of this Sega Nomad sort of thing that is
yeah.
both. But yeah, we'll get to the rest of that later.
Sure, absolutely. First, let's go on to what we've been playing, because we're short on news, because it's been...
It's the summer.
It's the summer. There's no video game news. San Diego Comic-Con just happened, so it's all movies and comics and cartoons.
And apparently,
stuff, so.
Like, the lamest Comic-Con in a while. I mean, like, yeah, the Godzilla trailer was good and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But there was, like, no Marvel stuff.
Yeah, well, Marvel backed out on it. They're not doing it because they don't have much to promote
no.
all the way to Infinity War 2. So, you know, it's, like, it's far
well,
too long for that.
They kind of had to put everything on pause
right.
until Infinity War 2.
Yeah, well...
Because you sort of fucked up your entire universe for a little while here. And honestly,
yeah.
I think we as a people could use maybe about 12 months away from the Marvel Universe.
But we won't, because we're getting Infinity War 2 next summer, and also...
But that's 12 months.
Yeah, true, but Captain Marvel in between that as well, which no one really cares about. So, you know, it's like little light adventures, I think. So.
Yeah, I don't know anything about Captain Marvel.
You know, she's, well, we could do an episode where I do a whole breakdown of, like, that character, which is interesting. Especially since, like, DC should have the rights to that.
Yeah, because they had to change their character to Shazam?
Shazam, yeah, because that was always the thing that he said, but sorry about the dog's squeak toy here. I had to take that away from him. Sorry, buddy.
We'll give it back.
We'll give it back to you later. Yeah, that used to belong to him, but somehow Marvel got the rights to it because they patented it first.
Well, also, their name's Marvel?
Yeah, but it's like, the Captain Marvel character of, you know, the Fawcett comics, like, he came way before the Captain Marvel character that was in Marvel. So it's interesting that they just lost on their lore. You know, they didn't really fight on their laurels on that one. But whatever, they just changed the name to Shazam.
And that, they just fucking Stan Lee to Jack Kirby'd him.
Yeah, yeah, basically. that trailer was okay. Aquaman trailer was okay. It's fine. You know, they look fine. Like, that's about as far as
I don't want to watch a movie about a fish man.
But what if that fish man was a handsome Hawaiian dude?
He is a handsome guy.
He's a handsome guy. And the guy playing the girl playing the redhead, she's very attractive as well. And Nicole Kidman's in it, so, you know. But it looks fine. Again, I'm not blown away by it.
I can't say anything about the women, but let me tell you, that guy's hot.
That guy's hot. He's a hot guy. Anyway.
Hot guy.
Looks fine. Whatever. That's the news. It's all comics and all that stuff. Godzilla looked okay, so. looked okay.
Maybe have a little bit more than 8 minutes of monster in that next movie. That'd be all right.
That'd be okay.
But I'm one of the few people who really liked that Godzilla movie.
I thought it was okay, too.
Should have kept Bryan Cranston alive a little longer.
Right? He should have been alive for that whole movie. He would have been so much more interesting as a character, you know, as a character in this franchise.
Yeah.
Like, and also he was the whole emotional weight of that movie. And and then he died, and then, like, there was no emotional weight.
Then after that, the emotional weight was, you and me, we need to run! Like, that's the rest of that movie after that.
Right.
So, yeah, speaking of movies.
Yes.
I watched a movie.
You did. You watched a movie. You wanted to speak of this.
Yeah, I don't want to dwell on this too long, and then we'll start talking about video games again. I watched Annihilation.
Yes, with Natalie Portman.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Jennifer Jason Leigh, yeah.
And then a couple of other people. One girl I know from something, the other one I've never seen before. But basically, it's a movie that's almost entirely a female cast. And it's really well done. Basically, there's this asteroid. Well, it's more like a meteorite thing that crashes into a lighthouse. And it creates this thing, you know, like this veil sort of thing.
Sure.
That starts blanketing the land, and it's slowly getting bigger.
Interesting.
And so the government just kind of cordons it off. It's like, oh, there was a chemical spill here. Natalie Portman's husband goes into the thing, mm-hmm. and is gone for like a year.
Right.
And then he comes back, and there's something wrong with him.
Right.
And she takes him to the hospital. Along the way, they get, you know, taken to this military black site. And somehow she ends up, because she's a biologist, she ends up finagling her way into going into this thing.
Okay.
And it's great. It's a hell of a movie. It's all about, like, you know, DNA that evolves. And, you know, it's, you know, the thesis statement of the film is like the, you know, intrinsically in human DNA
right.
is the desire to self-destruct.
Right.
So it's all these different kinds of plant and animal life and everything else merging together inside of this veil thing. It's a very cool plot. It's very awesome. It you know, I would say its final act is a little weak.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting throughout, even if it is weak near the end.
Yeah.
I strongly recommend anybody watch it.
I feel like that happens with movies in general nowadays. I feel like people don't know how to end their movies very well.
Well, especially ones that are as high concept as this.
Yeah. Like, usually when a movie really is, like, really does, like, stand out for me, it's because the third act is, like, strong.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh, yeah, that was a good third act. I don't see that anymore.
Like, I do appreciate that, but at the same time, whenever you go to a level of, you know, we as the audience have had to suspend our disbelief for so long and then buy into your subject matter, it's very hard to tick off all the boxes to please everybody who's had to hop aboard this ship together.
Yeah. You gotta adapt to the people who are, you know, intrinsically, like, into the situation, and you gotta appease the popcorn munchers too. we're just like ah.
And without any kind of spoilers whatsoever about anything past what I told you is in the first 10 minutes of the film.
Sure.
The thing I will say about the third act is that most movies where the third act kind of falls apart, mm-hmm. it's very messy. Mm-hmm. This one is very neat and tidy, okay. and it doesn't feel like somebody at the end was like, places, people, we need to finish this. You know, it felt like from the beginning they right. had this idea.
Yeah.
One, it helps that I think these are based on I'm not sure if they're short stories or full novels, but this is based on yeah. literature. And basically, right. I think they combined like three books into one thing.
Oh, that's impressive.
It's good.
That's impressive, yeah.
They did a really good job.
Okay.
Now, I'm sure if you read the books, you're just sitting in the theater going,
they left out that part. It's so important.
Yeah, yeah, everything is hinged upon this. But yeah, I'm not making fun of those people. I've sure. been that guy before.
Yeah, oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Same here.
But yeah, I think it's out on Blu-ray and everything now. Yeah. I'd recommend watching it.
Yeah, there you go. Boom. It's Annihilation. It's not... This is sort of an indie hit, I think, right?
It was yes. It was thing. One of those movies that came out definitely not going... It was around Oscar season. It was mm-hmm. never going to be in that kind of conversation.
Sure.
But the cinematography... Mm-hmm. The only issue I have with the cinematography is that I think some people conflate cinematography with CG.
Sure.
Some of the CG work is not great.
Not great, yeah.
But the cinematography
the way it's shot.
Is amazing. It yeah. looks, especially parts where, like, the plant life is retaking these buildings and things. Very Last of Us looking.
Yeah.
Even though it's only been a year, the world looks like it's been left alone for like 40.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Interesting.
It's got a look to it.
I'll go check that one out for sure. And people have been talking about that one for a little bit. So.
Yeah. And I wanted to see it and, Sam is anything that's got horror in it. She's mm-hmm. not really into it.
Yeah,
and I don't have a whole lot of free time anyway, so I wasn't able to separate from the group to yeah. go watch that thing when it was in theaters. So.
Yeah, this is the one with Jax in it, right? Jax and
yeah.
Shao Kahn.
Yes.
Okay.
This is the one where so Liu Kang,
Johnny Cage,
continuing
Johnny Cage killed off in the first minute.
Blew my mind.
Whoa!
New guy playing Raiden. Weird.
God, that movie sucks. Mortal Kombat. Combat Annihilation.
One of the worst.
Doesn't get that.
One of the worst.
Absolutely love how bad that movie is.
No, I can't even watch it though. It's to the point where it's so bad that I can't watch it.
You can't even watch it. It's not even entertaining. It's like you're just sad the whole time. Like what do they do?
Early 90s made for sci-fi quality cinema that somehow fucking escaped into a movie theater for you to pay for. What a shit show.
It wasn't released. It escaped.
Yes. It was in a tin and somehow rolled down the hallway. And sort of, I'll just air this for people to consume.
That's my favorite insult that Jim Cornette ever made about ICP. They don't have albums that release. They escaped. That's pretty great. Yeah, but that's the movie we talked about. So that's our movie talk. That's our movie corner out of the way.
Yeah, let's talk about the real shit.
Let's do it. Haas, what you been playing?
Yeah, I kind of tooled around with some stuff here in the last month or so. Mm-hmm. Since E3, they released like Black Ops 3 for free on PS4. I wanted to try out that 4K support for the PS4 Pro. Mm-hmm. That game does look a hell of a lot cleaner. That is still arguably the best Call of Duty game of this generation. Mm-hmm. It's also like the most Call of Duty game of this generation.
Sure.
Because it's got full co-op. It's got the zombie campaign that you play through after the game that uses the levels from the main campaign and just throws zombies in it.
Right.
So you get an entire other campaign using the same assets to play. That's really cool. So yeah, that was – if you download it or if you flagged it to your account and have like kind of lapsed on Call of Duty and you want to just check in to see like, oh, what's up with this Call of Duty?
Yeah.
It's the one.
Right.
I would recommend checking in on. Mm-hmm. I also played that free game for the Xbox this month, Assault Android Cactus.
Assault Android Cactus.
Bad.
You don't play as a cactus, sadly.
No. You're a woman named Cactus.
I would assume she's an assault android.
It's built on Unity, and you normally associate games built on Unity as having, like nicely complex, like, 3D models.
Yeah.
It doesn't have any of that. It also has, like, really poor texture quality, and it runs well. I would hope on an Xbox One X it runs well, but it's... ugly.
Yeah.
It's a dual joystick shooter, for those of you missing it. It's a level-based dual joystick shooter, so think Robotron as opposed to something like Geometry Wars.
Right.
But, you know, and it's kind of mission-based, but it's mission-based in the sense that you're in a box, Yeah. And there's going to be a dude you need to kill.
Yeah.
It tries to change up the formula a little bit by having different weapons, and you, your big, I think they just call it, quote unquote, the big gun.
The big gun.
Has a cooldown meter on it.
Right.
That you can run out of battery for, and you have to collect more batteries to charge that thing back up, so you got to use your, you know, kind of your pea shooter, your flamethrower kind of thing.
Yeah.
It plays fine for what it is, but man, that the personality is just not there for trying to have a story. And the environments are too small.
Yeah.
I just didn't like it.
Yeah, for a game like that, for a game that's like basically a Smash TV clone or a Robotron in a lot of ways, you need like minimal story and talking and not these cutesy characters.
Or if you're going to sort of do it.
Yeah.
Do it crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Like amp it up. Like, frickin' go like, Saints Row style, like, nuttiness.
And there have been a few games that did that, like, Salt Heroes Last Generation had a crazy over-the-top story, and the game made by the guys who make Just Cause, they made a top-down game where you're, like, a dude in a fucking truck.
Yeah.
And, shit, I can't remember the name of that right now.
Yeah.
I think it's got the word mercenary in it somewhere.
Sure.
but, yeah, that game is fucking great. So you get these completely over-the-top, Just Cause-ish, like, badass dude kind of conversation talking.
Yeah, yeah.
And your big, and that game had kind of an open worldy sort of thing to it, which was really cool.
Yeah.
But this thing is just, it feels a little lifeless.
Yeah.
I'm glad it was free.
Sure.
And I might go back and tool around with it a little more if I've got 20 minutes to kill here and there, but I wouldn't recommend buying it.
Yeah.
But as somebody who loves those kinds of games.
Yeah, absolutely. A double joystick shooter.
Yeah, I don't see a lot of value in it.
Yeah, there you go. Boom. You played some other sort of retro throwbacks, too. You played some,
yeah. Where do you want to start on that list?
Let's start with Sonic Mania.
All right. Yeah, Sonic Mania came out last year. The Sonic Mania Plus Edition came out for everything here in the last couple weeks. All right, so if you haven't played Sonic Mania, it's the way I would recommend you play it now.
Yeah.
Because it's got the new Encore Mode DLC in it, and it's everything, and it's got all the patches and all that stuff. And I like having physical Switch games.
Right.
Yeah. The reason I actually like having physical Switch games is that system sells so well that all the games hold their value crazy well. So it's like, if I get bored of this thing, guess what? I can go ahead and flip that shit and, get more than you probably should.
That's true.
Out of it. But, so I ended up picking up the physical copy of that. It came with, nice art book and stuff like that. But, the real star of the show is that Sonic Mania continues to be awesome.
Yeah.
I had that game, the regular game on the PC.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked a little bit about it last year. So I've spent some more time with it. It is fucking good. It's the best Sonic game.
It's amazing that it took a fan perspective of the game to really get it. Like, the fact that Sonic is made for speed, and yet so many levels designed in Sonic, especially one, are made to kind of punish you for going fast.
Yeah.
And it's like, why is that? Like, the whole point is like that he's, the way he's built, the way he jumps, the way he moves is to build speed.
Yeah.
Sonic 2 improved on that quite a bit because they gave him the spin attack, which absolutely improved the game tenfold. It kind of gave you a little bit of, tails kind of taking you where you need to be in a lot of places. So it didn't punish you as much for going fast. But there's still those areas of, like, slow down.
Underwater
sequences, slow down platforming, which isn't something that Sonic is made for.
Mania does that actually really well. The big issue is that in, I believe it was Sonic 2 especially, the mechanical-looking level with all the tubes where you can go underwater, it does a lot of those portions, and the meter is shorter than it was in Sonic 2 for you to die, but those segments are shorter.
Right.
So there's no part that I've encountered yet where you have to worry about finding the big fucking air bubbles and all that shit. No, it's like you're down here, as long as you don't tank the jump more than twice, you'll be fine.
You'll be good.
You'll get out of here, and it'll be fine. There's also, because the levels are so big, there's so many checkpoints. Oh, and the nice thing about this is 99% of the time, if you die...
Yeah.
in that game.
Yeah.
There's so many different paths in the level that you're not just, oh, I gotta go bang my head up against this again. No, oh, you can just do something else.
Yeah, do another path. Yeah.
The crazy thing about this, the level design in this is that there's a very top way to go.
Mm-hmm.
There's a highway to go.
Right.
There's the middle route to go. Mm-hmm. And then there's typically one or two subterranean levels in there. So to play through this game, to feel like you've actually seen everything, you'd need to play through every level, you know, three or four times at least.
Yeah.
To see all that game has to offer. Yeah. Now, in a natural run, you're not going to stay just on the top or in the middle or whatever. You're going to be going up and down and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And that's where the game really excels, is that it stays fast because there's all those... the lift things where you grab onto them and it shoots you up, kind of like Assassin's Creed has.
Yeah.
Platforms that'll take you down, mm-hmm. elevators, that kind of stuff. The way that their elevators work and a lot of the, you know, there's even the, you know, the lock-on move that you can do in 3D Sonic where yes. you jump and it'll dash?
Yeah, dash towards
it. It has that now to okay. break through walls.
Interesting.
So certain ones that you can even roll into them and it won't break.
Yeah.
But... If you're in a dead end and you can't figure out where to go, half the time if you just start jamming on the jump button a lot, you'll find a hidden wall. Because there is another way to get out of there, but that's their like easy route of, all right, you're stuck. I don't want you to have to stand here for a while.
Interesting.
The game is just so smartly designed that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's another design decision that I really like in this game.
Yeah.
Is that the levels don't end.
Yeah.
When you get to the end and it throws up the little sign after you fought a mini boss or whatever it is,
sure,
you just keep walking right.
Right. Okay. Yeah,
so
you're just in the next section of the level.
Yeah. So like everything naturally flows together. This entire game is effectively just like a big long stretch of road.
Yeah.
And I like that. It makes it feel like from its inception that game was designed to be one cohesive piece of world.
Right, yeah.
And I thought that was a hell of a thing.
Pretty cool.
I really like Sonic Mania, man.
Yeah.
Like, I hate Sonic.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of the franchise either. And but yeah, people love that game. And it's been hyped for a while. I guess Sega just needs to put it off on their fans to do the game for them instead.
Well, and the Encore mode mixes up a lot of stuff. It changes a lot of the, like, if you're somebody who played Sonic Mania before,
mm-hmm.
the levels were the blue balls, like the big 3D world thing, they changed that.
Yeah.
It's a pinball game now, which is cool, and the pinball game's way cooler.
Yeah.
It's a game where there's one level where the boss fight is actually you play Mean Bean Machine. So
yeah, that's great. That's pretty great. Yeah, you just start playing Puyo Puyo like out of nowhere.
Yeah, it's fucking great. So yeah, I strongly recommend Sonic Mania, even if you're on the fence.
Yeah, it's a good time for the Sonic team. They're making a lot of cash right now. So.
Except for Sonic Forces, that game was garbage.
Well, yeah, I think it made a lot of money though, right?
I'm sure it did.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's like, yeah.
If you want to find your first Sona.
I didn't say they were making great games. I said they're making a lot of money.
You're not wrong.
A lot of first Sonas out there want to play that game.
Yes.
You also played a game that I have been playing as well, Wonder Boy Dragon's Trap.
Yeah.
Fun game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That game's awesome.
Yeah.
even down to the packaging,
mm-hmm.
the alternate cover, like I have the physical version of that one too.
Yeah.
The alternate cover is a Master System box cover.
Oh, that's cool.
And the cartridge itself is the red brick design of a Master System cartridge.
Really?
That's awesome. I mean, everything about that thing is like, yo, this is a fucking Master System game. And then if you click...
You guys remember Sega?
Yeah. If you click the ZR button, whenever you're playing, it'll switch to the 8-bit
version. It'll switch to the 8-bit version, yeah.
And cool. I actually think I prefer playing it as the 8-bit version, although I love the art.
I love the art design of the animation of the new design. But yeah, that was a fun little gem that I found, or not found, it was pretty generally hyped on the store at the time when I bought it. But I accidentally found the switch over graphic thing. I for some reason didn't read that anywhere, and I was just like playing around with the buttons, and I flipped it over. I'm like, oh, I guess this is a remake of
an old
game.
I think I just broke this game.
It's like, I guess this is a remake of an old game. And I was like, all right, cool. It has a very old school, because it's just a remake of an old game, very old school difficulty level.
Yeah.
Very old timey Nintendo hard kind of a game.
But here's the thing. It has an approach that's almost roguelike.
Yes, it is very roguelike.
Because you can get armor sets and things like that. You lose your money when you die.
Mm-hmm.
But the on your run, if you buy armor, if you earn, you know, true unlockables for your character,
yeah,
those stay with you when you die.
Yes.
And I think that is a good distinction to make, that yes, this game is very punishing, this game is very hard
mm-hmm.
at times, but it does go out of its way to make concessions of, yes, this is a modern game.
Yes.
This is designed to be digested primarily as a portable game mm-hmm. in this, you know, for yeah. this version of it. And I think they nailed it, man.
Yeah.
And the art's really good.
It's really good. They also have that, they have that sort of old school Zelda or Dark Souls feel of, you can enter certain areas after you've gained a certain ability.
Yeah.
But you might get your ass kicked if you go to that certain one. So it's like, and you don't know how much further you're going to get in that area either. But you can pretty much go to where you want to go in a lot of the areas itself. So
near the beginning of the game, if you, in the main hub town, if you walk to the left, there's a building that is basically covered in these, like, checkered board boxes.
Mm-hmm.
The great thing about this, when I first saw those, I hadn't actually clicked the button yet to change the tile palette.
Sure.
And I'm like, that's a really non-modern looking texture. Why does it look like that? And yeah. then after I hit the button, I went, oh, they wanted it to look like the old one.
Yeah.
And they went, like, because almost everything else is just clearly inspired by, but not looking like.
Right.
But there are certain pieces of the environment, enemies, etc., mm-hmm. that nail the look of the original. Like, when your character with the original transformation that you can get, when you lay down to shoot fire,
yeah.
Your character curls up like a dog laying down.
Yeah.
And if you click over to the original graphics, that's exactly how it looked then.
Yeah.
I mean, there are certain beats in this thing that it's very cognizant of hitting.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's necessarily that they liked it or if they were just wanting to have enough beats for the hardcore fan.
Sure.
But I don't know. It, for me, as somebody who loves to, like, almost every new screen I go to, click back and forth,
mm-hmm.
it was cool. I like it. That game is really good. I think it's out on PC. Is it on the other consoles?
I think so, yeah. I think it's on Sony.
If it's on anything you can get it on,
yeah,
and you like old games,
mm-hmm.
it's good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, this one is less like, because this is a further down the line game, it's less like Adventure Island.
Yeah.
And more like its own thing, but mm-hmm. if you do have any, you know, as we discussed on the Adventure Island episode a couple months ago,
yeah.
if you do have an affinity for Hudson's Adventure Island
yeah.
From the NES days,
yeah.
you'll find something to like here.
Yeah. Also not level-based either. It's got the, kind of like, they got the gated kind of Metroidvania feel
yes,
to it.
Yes, open world map.
Open world map, yeah.
It's open world kind of with a twist. It's a hub world
yeah.
that you use to access everything, not just one big continuous map.
Right.
So everything is from a door in a hub city. So
yeah.
think about the cities you'd go to in Zelda 2 for the NES.
Yeah.
Because I don't know why, but these really remind me of that. So it's basically like you go to a Zelda 2 town, and that's your hub city.
Yeah.
And all the doors mm-hmm. in the town will either take you to shops, or they will take you to a new section of the world.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And the music, mwah.
Very good.
Love the music in this game, too, so there we go. Yeah, Wonder Boy, Dragon's Trap, go check it out. Last one I want to talk about, this one I want to talk about quite a bit, because I haven't played it yet and I want to, Octopath Traveler by Squeenix. Yeah. How's that game, Hoss? Is it good?
The only thing I've told you about this game so far is basically through our group text messages over the course of the last few weeks
mm-hmm.
of me just sinking farther and farther into that video game. And I really wanted to show you it today, mm-hmm. but I'm so far that I don't want you to look at it and go, I don't think I'd ever be able to play that.
No. I'm sure it would be
now,
advanced, but
I do want to say this because I think it's important to say up front.
Mm-hmm.
I died quite a few times during the beginning of that game, I think, and I'm not bad at RPGs.
Sure.
But I chose a specific character that is kind of an animal trapper character.
Okay.
This is your Pokemon-ish character that
sure.
basically you can trap enemies in the world,
mm-hmm.
and they each have like 5 uses.
Okay.
Some of them have more than that, but on average it's around 5.
Gotcha.
And they'll cast their special ability. So that's the way that your character gets elemental abilities.
Right.
Other than that, you just have arrow damage.
Okay.
Is what you can do. And you've got a dog with you that just does physical damage.
Right.
So in that, I don't recommend starting with that character first.
seems like the advanced level you started with or something. And
if you're somebody that's going to walk away from a game because you died four or five times.
Sure, yeah.
Because, like, oh, I'm never going to be able to get this.
Right. Pick the warrior.
It didn't happen for me, but I did say, like, I'll come back to you tomorrow a couple of times.
Right, yeah.
In the first, like, hour or so of that game.
Right.
Because I just thought, like, man, do I fucking suck at these things? but, yeah, like, the game is great. At this point, I've got, like, six of the travelers.
Mm-hmm.
Every time that you go around the world, you can... you're basically... guided to other travelers. Mm-hmm. To fill out your squad. There's eight total, and each of their names spell out Octopath, you know, the first letter of each of their names.
That's cool. I didn't know that. That's cool.
So, yeah, it's very cool. There's a scholar guy that's kind of an idiot. He's basically... shit, help me out here. Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, yeah.
How, like, he's very smart, but when it comes to anything that's, like...
Right, socially.
Street knowledge.
Yeah,
it's like, you don't get it.
Right.
Which is... It's pretty funny. I do think that everyone needs to know that the dialogue in this game is very leaden.
Mm-hmm.
It's also, like, a strange mishmash of very... old English, and then some characters use a more casual modern English.
So, like, Shining Force?
Yeah. And having these all be voiced and having these people talk to one another occasionally as an English technical writer is a little bit maddening. And also, like, don't come to this thing for the story. This is not Final Fantasy VI.
Right.
Come to this because it has one of the most satisfying combat systems you'll find.
There we go.
It's got a cool rush system that you can use to, if you find someone's... this is all about finding and breaking somebody's defense.
Right.
And so you can double attack if you know what somebody's weakness is, and that will typically break their guard. Mm-hmm. And then you can have other characters attack with that similar thing before... so there are certain boss fights where the boss might never attack.
Right.
Because if he does, he's going to wipe you.
Right.
And that's the entire basis of that fight.
Right,
is figure out what his weakness is, break his guard initially, and never let him charge.
Yeah.
And it's really fucking cool. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention the art style.
Yeah.
It's a 16-bit RPG with awesome hand-drawn sprite characters.
Yes.
And I say hand-drawn sprite characters... They're sprites like on the 16-bit system, not modern games where it's clearly hand-animated.
Mm-hmm.
No, these still look like 16-bit dudes.
Right, yeah. It looks very reminiscent of Final Fantasy VI, 3, for those that
play on the Secret of Mana.
Secret of Mana.
I get a lot of Secret of Mana out of this.
Yeah.
Given the fact that there's just so much water in this game, and that's kind of the cool thing, is that this game is built on Unreal Engine 4.
Okay.
And it's a lot about camera focus. So it kind of obfuscates a lot of the 3D backgrounds that are going on back there. There's a lot of, like, a bokeh camera effect.
Yeah.
To focus on your characters and what's in the current foreground.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, in the background, there will be, like, a lake or, like, a, you know, a hill covered in snow. And it's all glistening and shining. And it's these effects that you would never dream to have gotten.
Right.
It's almost like if when 3D graphics technology came around, if somebody sat down and said... You know, Xenogears was actually kind of this way.
Sure.
What if we made a kick-ass 2D game in a 3D world?
Right, yeah.
And they've done it. It's really fun to play. It's a great Switch game because I'm primarily playing it as a portable.
Mm-hmm.
It's great to pick up for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Start a fight and even just snooze it when you're in the fight.
Right.
It's a hell of a game. That's cool. It is beautiful.
That's cool.
Sam doesn't think it looks good.
Oh, really? Interesting.
But she doesn't have an appreciation.
That's about to say, yeah, that's interesting, because she doesn't have that appreciation of the old school. And,
like, I think in the same way, and this is not to, you know, say anything bad about my wife, but I think if you showed this to kids...
Right, yeah, sure.
Kids,
yeah.
Because they don't have that background and 16-bit graphics...
True. It's true.
They would look at it and go, this game looks like shit.
It's true. No,
like, all the good stuff is all blurry in the background.
Well, it's interesting that sort of thing, because it's a limitation of the time, is all that was, but it became an art style that people appreciated. Like, that's, you know, just like even 8-bit stuff. Like, people will paint stuff in 8-bit. It's like, look, I'm reading 8-bit, whatever. And it's like, I think that's funny that that became art to us.
Well, and like, just every time I play it, she walks by and goes, I don't know, this game, it just looks weird.
That's awesome.
But
that's,
yeah.
That's a fun little thing in human evolution, I guess.
Well, and, you know, it's, you know, the rose-colored glasses, you know, like, you know, that kind of thing that would harken back to your childhood.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have an affinity for that,
it's true.
You can't manufacture it in people.
Yeah,
so.
No, it's true, yeah. If you watch any of those old, if you watched half of the old cartoons that I watched when I was a kid that I freaking love, and I can understand that it's terrible, but it's like, you know, you watch it and be like, did you like this? It's like, yeah, when I was a kid, I loved it, so.
I listened to enough of that, shit, the Goku podcast.
All Systems Goku?
Yeah,
I gotta get back on that. I'm episodes behind.
They just finished it.
Oh, did
the episode that comes out this week is, episode 20. They finished the Cell Saga.
Nice. All right. I need to go back and watch that. Yeah, go back and listen.
So,
God, they finished up so quick. And they were almost done with Frieza when I was watching.
Well, they're doing Kai, which cuts out
all the excess crap. Yeah, sure.
I guess Dragon Ball Z podcast is what we're talking about.
I guess Cell goes pretty quick in the Kai version, so there we go. But interesting. All right, cool. Yeah, so that's it for what we've been playing. Let's go on to GBA, the Game Boy Advanced. This is the system that came out after the long life of the Game Boy and the Game Boy Color.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Game Boy Pocket as well, but Color was kind of the same thing, I think, where it just had colorized monitor in certain areas. Or
the Color ran on it. It's effectively like the difference between the 3DS and the new 3DS.
Right, yeah.
It was more powerful, but it was still an 8-bit system.
Mm-hmm.
It had the ability to colorize some old games that were encoded for it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it had higher quality audio capabilities.
Right.
And really it was about making the games in color.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the Pokemon Blitz that happened late in the Game Boy's life,
you know,
the Game Boy Pocket started selling like crazy, and they're like, yeah, I guess we need to keep this thing around for a while.
Yeah.
Because we, in America, were late to the Pokemon train. We were, like, 2 years behind them, and they're like, there's a lot of Pokemon games that are still needing to come out.
So yeah.
We needed another piece of hardware.
Right.
So they made the Color.
Right.
Which might be the most useless handheld of all time.
Yeah.
It's
like the PS1 for handhelds, I would say.
I like 3 Color games.
Right.
I had a Color.
Yeah.
I loved the hardware. It felt great.
Sure.
But I didn't really like Color games.
No.
Just because most of them were like, their aspirations were too big. Everybody got this new piece of hardware from them. We're like, oh, we're going to try to make games look like Super Nintendo games. And they all ran like shit.
Yeah. It's like, you know, oh, the hardware's not good. Oh, shit. Damn it.
By that point, the Nintendo, the Game Boy Color was effectively just a Pokemon machine.
Yeah, yeah.
There was some other good stuff out there, but really, that's what it was.
Yeah, it was to sell Pokemon, yeah, for sure.
Really great Kirby game in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Really good Yoshi game in there, but really, you know, that's about it.
Right.
That colorized version of Tetris was good.
Colorized version of Tetris, yeah, that's right.
But yeah, so the Game Boy Advance came out in 2001.
Yes.
I think I had been out of high school for, like, 6 weeks by the time it came out. So I naturally, as a high school graduate, had nothing going on, waiting for, you know, what's going to come next in life. So I went out and picked one up the morning that it came out.
Yeah.
Got that sweet, solid purple one, the grape one.
Yeah, the grape purple.
I refused to buy clear hardware, so it was a good pickup for me. That is arguably the most mixed I've been on a piece of hardware when I bought it on day one, other than, like, maybe the Xbox One.
Interesting.
I picked up it. There's so many great things about it.
Yeah.
And, like, it had a fucking amazing Castlevania game on it.
Yeah.
And a great Mario Kart game. And a great F-Zero game.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
Yeah.
But it had no backlight. Castlevania Circle of the Moon, even with a worm light. And there was a whole cottage industry of companies that made these devices called worm lights.
Yes.
So for you to know, the Game Boy Advance, when it first came out, didn't have a backlight in it.
Right.
So what people did was they had this device that would plug into the expansion port, which was basically like your link cable port,
mm-hmm.
and it would shine a light, it would hang over and shine a light onto the screen mm-hmm. of your Game Boy Advance, similar to something you probably had for an original Game Boy for car trips.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I went out first day, because it had already been out in Japan, I think, for a month or two before it came here, maybe 3 months at the most.
Mm-hmm.
It was a pretty short Japan to America launch. At that time, it was typically, you know, the Dreamcast was like a year and a couple of months between
right.
when it came out in Japan and here, which
sure.
was not uncommon.
Right.
You know, the PS2 was about a year.
Yeah.
So the launch of that device made me know that, all right, so you're going to need a warm light.
Yeah.
And that Castlevania game is really dark.
Yeah.
All these things are true.
Right.
But the great thing is that the Game Boy Advance is a Super Nintendo.
Yes.
It's not quite as powerful, but it's close enough, and the screen was low enough resolution and small enough that it didn't matter.
Right.
And they could port really good ports of Super Nintendo and NES games to it,
mm-hmm.
and they looked fucking awesome on that thing.
Yes.
And that device, I'll say, even today, holds up well. I can throw one of those cartridges into my Retron and put it on my 4K fucking television.
Yeah.
And they still look great. The only problem that you ever run into is the text is real big.
Yeah.
Real big. Because that screen was real small.
Yeah.
So when did you get into the game with the Game Boy?
I got into the game. The first one I played was the original Game Boy Advance. My roommate got it. He got the old purple grape one about 2 years into its lifespan, I think. Because that's when Zelda Four Swords Adventure started. Is that around then?
Yeah, that A Link to the Past game that had Four Swords in it.
Yes. He got that, and I played a little bit of that. He had another friend who had a link cable, I think. You had to link that up to a different thing, or was it... How did that work again?
The link cable. Basically, if you wanted to go one-to-one, you had a cable... Wait, you're talking about going to a GameCube, or you're talking about going Game Boy to Game Boy?
Going to GameCube, because we went to the GameCube.
Yeah, you had this... it was the Game Boy... the GameCube link cable.
Yeah.
Game Boy link cable. It plugged into the link port that you would use to go from Game Boy to Game Boy.
Yes.
And it would plug... It had like a 6-foot cable on it, and would plug into the controller port on a GameCube.
Yes. Yeah.
So, originally, when that link cable came about, it was... The way they pitched it was that Pac-Man versus game.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, basically, if you had one person who had a Game Boy
mm-hmm.
and three other people who had controllers...
Yes.
The person with the Game Boy was Pac-Man.
Right.
And the people that were the ghosts could only see a tiny little window...
Yeah.
...of what was in the world, but Pac-Man...
Right. Pac-Man could
...was
see
seeing the entire
the thing
as usual.
Yeah, exactly.
It tried to explain away how dumb the ghosts are in Pac-Man. But there were a lot of games like that. Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles, mm-hmm. Four Swords Adventure.
Yeah.
Did you ever get four-player link cable games together on those?
We played Four Swords Adventure. We had some of his friends came over. We did play all four links. Yes, we played all four links. That was a lot of fun. That was real fun. That was when we first started playing. That was my first experience with GBA. When I first got a version of GBA, it was Game Boy SP. I think I got that for a Christmas gift. I bought that one myself. That's what it was. I bought that myself, and I got Fire Emblem as a Christmas gift. That's what it was. Because I said, I want to get this SP.
Ooh.
So I bought that. I got Fire Emblem, the original.
You still got that Fire Emblem?
I do. I still have that Fire Emblem.
That's not a cheap game.
Is it not? Yeah, interesting.
I mean, it's like $50.
$50. That's pretty good, yeah. I played the hell out of that game. I tried so many different ways to level
not
up
lose your entire party.
Well, just like leveling up different characters that I didn't bother with the last time, and like realizing what they were good at and stuff like that. I played that. God, I played that so many times because I wanted to get to a certain like I wanted to get to a point to where I could beat the game with all the quote weakest characters. That's what I wanted to do. I never did do that. I think I was still fighting the dragon at the end with all my weakest characters because, the first thing you do is that you level up everybody that's, like, beefy, such as Oswin and Marcus, and you just have them kill everybody, and then at the end you just have them kill all the bosses, and then you kill the dragon with them. It's really simple.
Yeah.
But then when you start to get, like, tactical, and you're like, oh, that guy's good against these types, stuff like that, I wanted to get an actual... Because, like, the thing about Pegasus Knights, they're awesome if you level them up. like, but
it's a long road to get there.
You got it. It's a long way if you want to.
That never changes.
Yeah, right.
Even on the new one,
Pegasus Knights are always you got to give them a chance. You got to have them fight magic people. That's basically fight dark magic people. Level them up. Give them that upgrade and let them turn into Pegasus. Whatever they're called, like I forget what the upgrade is to it, like Pegasus Lord or something, and they kick everybody's ass, and even archers are barely effective against them after that. So just they always like they get in there, and archer always just tags them once, they're dead like in a second.
I always felt like back in those days, especially that Fire Emblem was this boiled down version of. The series that went on to be called Advance Wars,
yes,
was originally called Famicom Wars.
Famicom Wars, yeah, I think.
And that series, so Fire Emblem is Famicom Wars and Pokemon with a risk reward system.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's for the people that like. I want to, you know. Did you ever see the episode of that 70s show where they're playing Pong?
Yeah, yeah.
And they're trying to make smaller paddles.
Smaller paddles, yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
It's for those people that, like, I played all the Pokemon. I'm good. I need something that's got some stakes.
I got some stakes, too. I need to have some stakes to it, because,
I need to know if my guy dies, then I'm fucked.
Those are the same guys that, like, are, like, pissed at the new Fire Emblems that let you turn off the permadeath. They're like, that's fucking bullshit.
No.
There should be no turning off permadeath.
I want my mistress to put the high heel into my crotch. and I'm saying that as somebody who actually really loves those games. I'm not fucking with Fire Emblem people. I think those games are great.
Absolutely. But that's definitely a thing. Like, I'm a person that I'm not like hardcore about it. But if I'm gonna play a Fire Emblem game, I want permadeath because I want there to be stakes to what
I don't like when people gatekeep though.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's fuck like, you. You're not allowed to play.
It's like that's what I'm saying. It's like put the option in. Like options are fine.
I'm
like,
never gonna choose that.
Yeah, exactly. The option. If a kid wants to play it, they don't want to have their favorite character die off. Like let them freaking play it. You know, it's like
as somebody who's colorblind, you don't get upset when they put in a colorblind mode. That's not the way to play it. That's not the way the game looks.
Yeah, it's like it's a thing that
it's an accessibility option.
Yeah, I've talked about it a few times on this podcast before. I'm really enjoying how people are actually giving option for that sort of thing. That's like, you know, it helps to just be like, hey, this is a way to play it. It's probably not the best way to play it, but just to let you know it's here. You know, Darkest Dungeon does that. You know, it's like they have the ability to turn off permadeath in that as well. But it's like
I think it might have been Darkest Dungeon that had the nicest message that I ever read. It's something to the extent of, hey, what you might want to do is go ahead and switch it on over to easy.
Yeah.
And when you play the game next time, try it on the harder difficulty.
Right.
You'll understand the game
better.
More,
yeah,
you
exactly.
Know? I like that kind of like, hey man, it's way far from like the Ninja Dog mode and Ninja Gaiden where, I gotta wear a pink bow now because I wanted it to be easier.
You wanna activate pussy bitch mode? Alright, cool. Yeah, it's like, alright. You have to insult me about it.
I'm so glad that we're getting farther and farther away from like the 90s bro mentality video games.
For
like,
sure.
This is only for guys. Oh, you're buying a video game, lady? Is that for your husband? Is that for your boyfriend?
Meaning when we get to that point in a game, like when we call back to it, it'll be hilarious.
Yes. Right?
When we call back to that mentality, be like, this game's dumb and old. I love it. Anyway, that was my experience with GBA. I had a lot of other games on it, obviously, but the Fire Emblem was when I first jumped in and started playing a lot of those. The other thing I had was I had a buddy make me one of those custom cartridges for it that had like a bunch of old school, like all the Mega Man games and stuff like that. That was a lot of fun. I would use that on trips a lot. I think I still have that somewhere.
Yeah,
that was fun.
R4 cartridge for the DS is where Nintendo's armor began to chip with their security.
Yeah, a little bit.
Those hardware lockout pieces were not necessarily enough anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
I was an early adopter. I actually didn't buy a GBA SP until maybe that Christmas of 2003,
because
it came out the summer of 2003. So 2001, summertime, about 2 years total before the GBA SP.
Sure.
And in that time, the system had started to rocket to prominence. I mean, even people that... you know, said like, I'm never going to buy one of those things that doesn't have the backlight in it, man. They're garbage. It just, at a certain point, you're like, oh, the Pokemon's on here, the Mario Kart's good, there's this, and it was just this murder's row of, like, Advance Wars and the Zelda port, and just all this stuff just kept ticking off to the point where you're like, fine, I'll get it.
That was pretty much the, that was basically the genesis of Advance Wars over here, wasn't it? Like,
yes, that was our first exposure.
Yeah, yeah, that was, like, the whole genesis of that, because I remember that game being huge, and, like, the Japanese were like, oh, that's been big there for forever.
Well, it was one of those things where, you know, and I don't say this to, it's probably going to sound, like, more xenophobic than it is, but, you know, there was this long-held, you know, thought process from Japanese companies that, oh, that game that you need to think and plan about too much instead of running and jumping on stuff?
Yeah.
They're not going to like this.
Well, it's true.
And, I mean, well, and granted, like, those early Final Fantasies, you know, there's a reason why one came out and then they skipped 2 and 3 here.
Right, yeah. And,
you know,
and also gave, like, a packaged Earthbound with a giant frickin' guide to, like, which upped the price to about $90.
Well, and why stuff like Mystic Quest came out and Secret of Mana was a good, if you had never really tried to get into a JRPG before, Secret of Mana is a great way to get into it.
Yeah.
You know, and then that's around the time that Nintendo started coming up with this idea of what are you going to call the quote-unquote my first RPG for every generation.
Right.
Pokemon's a really good example of that. But, you know, for strategy games, Advance Wars is perfect for that.
Yeah.
Those games are really boiled down. Like, you can actually go from Advance Wars to playing XCOM.
Yeah.
Which is incredibly advanced.
Yes.
And but it teaches you enough about the formula and stances and height differentials and you know unit types and all this kinds of strength and weaknesses sort of thought process that goes into that.
Yeah.
They boiled it down to like this really easy to drink cocktail.
Yeah.
That you can just start jumping up. It's like, oh, like I played the Pokemon and I played the Advance War. Now I'll play the Fire Emblem.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they just started building all these blocks together.
Yeah.
There's a sad thing about the GBA is that around this time is where all the visual novel games started getting really big in Japan. It's one of the reasons why the Game Boy Advance is like one of the best-selling systems of all time in Japan. Not only because these people took it on subways and shit like that, but there were visual novels. That's actually where like Phoenix Wright came from.
Right.
Was on the GBA. We actually never got to touch any of that stuff until the DS.
The DS,
Once they started seeing that cross appeal with the DS, where they're like, hey, maybe somebody other than 14-year-old boys want to play this thing.
Objection!
Oh God, I love those things.
They're great. Not great at law, though. They're not great at law.
No, no. They're, I would say loose at best.
Loose at the very best. Loose on the law. But yeah, it is interesting that like, the type of games that we started to get because of the GBA and like what that opened up for us, because it was interesting because like because we'd never had things like Fire Emblem over here. The first people, I'd say the reason, like Smash Brothers was kind of the reason that Fire Emblem got an audience over here, because we didn't know who Roy and Marth were until then. And then it was like, oh, these characters.
Who
the fuck are these guys? And then I learned about Fire Emblem from that. And I was like, oh, it's like Shining Force, because that's the only game that was like that when it, you know, by the time I came over here.
And there were a lot of characters like that in the Smash Brothers games, like, you know, the Ice Climbers and Ness. There were a lot of these characters that were in those games that were like, who the fuck is that? Even though those games actually come out there, it's either they were they came out in America, but they were so long ago, or games that hadn't quite come here yet.
Yeah, the trophies, too. Like, the trophies would have characters that are like, who's that?
Yeah.
Like, they had the chick from Clock Tower.
Yeah.
That's one of the trophies. I'm like, I have no idea what Clock Tower is.
It's a really big Super Nintendo game.
It's a great game!
Yeah.
It's a great game.
The man following me with scissors.
Oh, man, Scissorman. Oh, man, Bobby. Creepy. Creepy guy.
I bet that game doesn't hold up in any way, shape, or form.
It's interesting.
I enjoyed it.
I actually actually played it a couple Halloweens ago. It's actually pretty still kind of creepy. Like, the music kind of is a little bit creepy, you know?
At the time, it was awesome. That port
of
that game, I would say probably the way I would recommend playing it the most, other than, like, an emulator, if you want a legit way, the PS1 port of that game I remember being good.
Yes.
They redrew a lot of
redrew
stuff.
A bunch of stuff, people like that one a lot. That's kind of like the master.
It's probably not what you would speedrun with because it has like, you know, load times and stuff like that. But if you wanted to, it's as close to modern, I bet, as you could get that.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like the thing is, it's like not to get in a giant hole about Clock Tower. It'd be worth doing an episode on Clock Tower. The Clock Tower is a series, I would say. I played the
first three?
Yeah, yeah. I played the first two. I played the first one, I played the second one, I believe. But it's interesting just because, like there's different ways to go about it. There's different ways to beat it. There's different endings, obviously.
Fail states. I love fail states in that game. They're so good.
You can get out of that mansion within 1 minute of that game.
Yep.
You don't win, but you get out of the mansion.
I survive.
But it's really cool. That game's awesome. Did that ever come out on GBA? I don't know if it did or not.
No,
I never did.
I don't think so, anyway.
I think
not here, anyway.
Not here, yeah, not here at least. But maybe it's on my cartridge. My special cartridge.
Maybe that's why I remember it.
Maybe that's why I remember it. I don't remember playing it on the SP, but I remember playing it eventually. But yeah. GBA was cool, man.
Just start giving me some of your top games.
Top games on GBA? Oh man, I have to look at it. Advance
Wars. Then I got a question right at the end of this thing.
Advance Wars, definitely. Link, okay. Four Swords Adventure, definitely. Okay. Minish Cap was really was that on there?
Oh, yeah.
Minish Cap was on there, yeah. Minish Cap was good. That was the first chronological Zelda game before Skyward Sword. That was the first one. So you had Minish Cap, Four Swords Adventure, because they're Zelda games. Fire Emblem, absolutely love Fire Emblem. I don't know if I played 10 games on it, honestly. I'll give you top five.
The Castlevania Trilogy.
Castlevania Trilogy.
Yeah. Harmony of Dissonance, Aria Sorrow.
Yes.
Metroid Fusion.
Yes,
that's one of the greatest games of all time.
That's one of the best games ever. That's on there, definitely. I'm playing that now, actually. Because I borrowed it from you.
Yes.
Which I need to... it's so harsh to play on that. It's backlit, but it's just harsh to play.
If you had the option playing it at DS Lite,
is
the best way.
Yeah, okay.
The screen's a little bit smaller, so it's a little bit sharper, but also the increase in resolution clears up a lot of the garbage.
Okay, yeah.
I actually don't own a standard GBA SP right now. I have a micro, and I have a standard GBA, but my SP died long ago. I actually play all my GBA games either on the Retron if I want to play it on the TV, or I play it on my DS Lite.
Nice.
I just prefer playing them there.
Yeah.
There we go. It's definitely preferred. Oh, and little tip. If you have a DS or a DS Lite, and the top screen breaks on it, you can use that as something to play GBA games alone. Mm. Just bust the top screen off of it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and just use it as a Game Boy Advance.
Huh. Interesting.
Metroid Zero Mission is really, really good.
Right.
The Final Fantasy re-releases.
Amazing Mirror is good too.
Never played Amazing Mirror. I've always heard such good things about it, but I've never had it in my hands.
That's a real good one.
You know what's fucking awesome on the GBA?
Yeah.
Is the port of Tony Hawk 2.
Interesting.
Yeah, I have it, and you should try it sometime. It's a isometric view, almost like the Diablo camera.
Interesting. Okay.
And it's all pixel.
Oh, I could see that, yeah.
And it's super good.
I could see that. That's pretty cool,
It was actually made by, I think that was Vicarious Visions.
Okay, yeah.
A developer that went on to be a huge port house for Activision for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that that's the thing that got them their fucking job because it's so good.
I remember this being like the deluge of the Dragon Ball Z games we started to get to.
Oh, yeah. That's where that became a vomit ground for
those. Yeah, they kept like spitting those out quite ridiculously.
Well, because they got to bring a bunch of the Super Nintendo ones that never came here.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of the new ones.
A bunch of the newer ones, yeah, came out. On over here too. There was one that I always wanted to play with Mother 3. I've never played Mother 3, and I would love to play Mother 3.
Well, you can if you have a Retron.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You buy the cartridge from Japan and you take the fan translation and you dump it in there.
Dump it in there on the thing. Yeah.
So
that's pretty cool. Yeah. There's also a fan translation on it via PC because apparently Nintendo does not care if you pirate anything of the Mother series. I don't know why. There was a large campaign to get Mother 3 like translated over here, and it literally on the front page was like, Nintendo, if you tell us to stop, we will stop. We will cease and desist. They never got a cease and desist from Nintendo.
Yeah, the way that they've actually done it is that their fan translation is that it's just a translation patch that you have to apply to the ROM.
Right, yeah.
And so it's they really haven't broken any laws.
Right. Yes, sure.
They haven't, it's not like, you know, making an AM2R kind of thing where you're making a new game.
Yeah, yeah. You're
and they're not giving you the ROM. You have to go source the ROM somewhere else.
Yes, this is true.
Or you can be like me, and on the Retron, you're playing a legit cartridge.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure that's how they would prefer for you to do it. but, you know, it's that kind of thing. So.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a breadth of games on the GBA that I really liked. You know, it was really a port house for Super Nintendo era games. You know, like all the Donkey Kong countries came out there.
Right.
Which was the first time that, you know, those games were available on anything other than the Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing is that the Game Boy Advance existed in a time when we didn't have a Wii yet, so you didn't have a virtual console.
Right.
And it was really in the, what I would describe as the infancy of pirating.
Yeah.
Actual ROMs and teaching people how to install ROMs and how to put in bootstrappers.
Yeah.
And stuff. So these kinds of things for your average person, if you wanted to play Link to the Past anymore, especially if you wanted to play it on the go, your only way was to do this.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it was, it was a very, it was a big land grab for Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they, throughout the Game Boy's lifespan, they kind of shoved everybody to the side.
Yeah.
But during the GBA, I'm shocked that Sony had the hubris to try to get in with the PSP, which was pretty successful.
Sure.
But at that point, like, you were stepping to the tallest throne in the land. For someone to think that they could do that at that time when Nintendo was just so completely unopposed is wild.
Of handheld,
I mean, but granted, like, they sold over 100 million of those damn things, so, I mean, who couldn't smell the money?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of like when they, you know, when they came out with the Wii and hit that casual market, everybody jumped on with their own Wii remotes because they were like, oh, we can get that money. And even, and it was whatever at that point. It's just like,
yeah, but the thing that, like, everybody always ends up misstepping with this, and it's why, you know, the Game Boy Advance had ridden out this consistent dominance from the original Game Boy era, is that everybody else that ever tried to come at them always came at them with a really expensive consumer electronics device.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, the $99 handheld system, the $49 handheld system.
Yeah, yeah.
I think on launch day, I think my GBA was $129.
Right, yeah.
You know, they always kept the things so fucking cheap. It's like, oh, they're underpowered. Yes.
Yeah.
But that's how you make it cheap enough to make sure everybody can buy it.
Right, yeah. And complexity isn't something that's necessary, especially at the time, for handheld mobile gaming. Like, it just wasn't, you know?
Well, and I say this today. I think the reason that Nintendo is keeping the DS line around is because I think there's, like me, if I had children right now that were 6, 7, 8 years old that wanted a handheld system, I would think twice about maybe getting them a Switch as something to take somewhere.
Right.
Because that's a fragile piece of high-powered consumer electronics.
Yes.
It breaks the Nintendo mold while carving out a new piece for themselves.
Yes.
But I think keeping that DS pillar alive is important, just from a pure, you know, standpoint of reliability, cost, and, you know, just kind of child-proofing, I guess, for lack of a better phrase. You ever seen a Switch drop?
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
All the
Joy-Cons shoot off of it, and you're like, oh, God!
No!
What just happened?
No! Do they eject, like, automatically?
Well, every time I've seen one drop, at least one of the Joy-Cons shoots off of it, and you're boing! And you're like, then you break the rail, and the rail's broken forever, so they don't lock in anymore. It sucks. It's not happened to me, but I've seen it happen to people.
Yeah. That's why I'm hesitant to take that thing out anywhere. It's like, I don't know. Like,
I take mine everywhere.
Yeah. I took mine on the trip to Vegas, but I barely ever brought it and took it out, so I don't know.
I have a hard time taking systems on trips. Now, if it was a business trip, and it's like, after 6 p.m., I'm just kind of in this hotel room, yes, it's perfect for that.
Yeah.
But, you know, on, like, family vacations, I need to probably either only take one thing or not bother anymore.
Right.
Because I find myself just not even messing with them. Because when you're on the airplane, you're like, yay, I'm ready to go, I'm ready to go. And then when you're on the airplane back, you're like, woo, ready to get home. Yeah. Ready to get home.
Ready to just sleep this off.
Yeah, I just want to go.
And then deal with 3 hours of violent turbulence across the country.
But, the last thing I'll talk about is... It's actually where we're at right now.
Yeah.
Is when the DS line was announced, they were very clear that the DS was not a successor to the GBA.
Yeah.
Actually, the same day that they unveiled the DS, they unveiled the Game Boy Micro.
Okay.
Because they wanted to be very clear, this is their third pillar. That they were not ending this, they were not sunsetting the Game Boy line, because it was so wildly successful that they didn't want to spit in the face of, A, the consumers that had bought it, or B, like, ruin their credibility with the consumers.
Cause,
yeah, they still had stuff for... The next 12 months for the GBA were really healthy.
Sure.
The 12 months after that, there was still stuff. I wouldn't describe it as healthy.
Right.
But...
it was a lingering.
Yeah. But the, you know, their argument was the DS is, this is not the next Game Boy.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they called it something different.
Yeah.
And, you know, the, that's kind of where we're at right now, is that the DS line still exists.
Mm-hmm.
And the Switch is kind of their new pillar. Like, there is no more home console for Nintendo.
Right.
They closed the line for the Wii U. That's done.
Right.
I actually don't think they'll ever make a dedicated home console again.
Yeah.
I would be very surprised if they ever did. A, this seems to be very successful for them.
Right.
But B, like, I think that they're just trying to get beyond that. They want a borderless device.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether you're at home, you're on the train, you're anywhere, you can use it, yada, yada.
Yeah.
We're going to go to rooftop parties. And it's
going to
be great.
Hipster rooftop party. Woo!
I'll never forget that video.
You know what? I laughed at that video. I've seen it happen.
Yeah.
I've been to a rooftop party. I see Switches there. I'm like... They were right. They called it.
Like, yeah, but they're not really playing anything as much as they're just like, we got a couple people goofing around Mario Kart. Yeah, but they're not like...
That's true.
We're all going to crowd around the 7-inch screen.
Yeah, sure, that's right. I'll play some Snipper Clips, you know.
Snipper Clips like
is great. It's a great game. It's a great game.
So good. Did you ever use a Game Boy Micro?
No, I never did use the Game Boy.
Oh, man, it's small.
Yeah, you told me about that. Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, dude, were we on the air? Were we recording when you talked about the guy in college?
No,
we weren't. Yeah,
like, yeah, I had a buddy that would actually clasp his fingers together like as if he was thinking, and have the Game Boy inside of his hand, of his palms, in college. So it would look like he was sitting there, like, kind of thinking introspectively, but actually he was just playing Final Fantasy on his Game Boy Micro. I always looked at that man as he was a trendsetter.
He was a hero.
Trailblazer.
He's a trailblazer. A hero, one would say.
He's the hero that we need.
He's the hero of our generation.
We deserved it.
We deserved
it. But, I love the Game Boy Micro as a stupid, dumb thing.
Yeah.
It was a good way for them to hedge their bets.
Yeah.
Like, if the DS came out and, you know, laid right on its face, they could say, well, here's the new Game Boy. It's advancederer.
It's smallerer. And was that around the time of N-Gage? Was that around that time?
N-Gage, is around 04, so that's the time of DS, That is a woof.
That was ahead of it. Well, it was bad, but it was an idea that was ahead of its time, obviously.
You were talking into a taco.
Yeah. It was a taco. It looked like a little taco.
Well, and also you had to hold it sideways, like you were holding a taco to your head.
I forgot
about that. What a poorly thought out device.
Woo, that thing was amazing.
It was game system first and sort of a phone?
Sort of a phone as well.
Yeah.
The game system taco. Ah, the taco game.
Yeah, the DS era is where we start getting into portable game consoles competing with smart devices.
Yeah.
Because the smartphone didn't really hit its stride until like the iPhone 3G, and that was in 09 but really even before that it was, well, I can play the Bejeweled on my Razer phone. why do you need a Game Boy
and who needs it?
You know, there have always been these soothsayers that are out there like, oh, portable games are over, why would you ever want it? The hell is that?
What the hell was
that? I don't know why soothsayers.
These soothsayers are amazing.
They sound like old timey prospectors.
They do. They sound like old timey prospectors. I love them.
He was up there in the hill.
He was up in here.
My Game Boy's up there.
There's gold in him now. You know,
and I hate to say it, but very forward thinking of Nintendo not using the Game Boy name anymore.
Yeah.
I don't think it ever bothered. Like, I knew a lot of girls who had, like, Game Boys, and they loved them, and they loved Pokemon and all that stuff.
Sure.
I think you would release a device called the Game Boy in 2018. What's...
Yeah, it would be...
I'm not saying that I side with that.
Sure, there'd be some nonsense. You're right, there would. There'd be
I don't necessarily know if there'd be nonsense as much as, like, oh, is this... This is not for me? Like, people, like, you know, our culture is all about inclusion and universality at this point. And I'm a big proponent of that.
Sure.
But, like, you know, I think anything that, like, tries to chop, you know, it's like when a musician comes out and says their political platform. It's like, well, now you've just chopped half of society out as people that can never buy your records because you don't agree with them.
Basically.
And, you know, like, well,
that's what one of my favorite quotes from Michael Jordan ever. He's a big Democrat, big old Democrat. And a lot of the people from the DNC were like, hey, why don't you come to the DNC? And he's like, no. It's like, why not? You should be more involved. It's like, dude, Republicans buy shoes too. he's like, yep.
Damn right they do.
And with that note,
that's why we don't have a Game Boy.
Yeah. But
girls buy games.
Girls buy games too. Do you think they'll... So, like you said, you think they're just marketing towards, like, they won't have, like, a console system and a regular... They'll just have an all-encompassing...
I agree.
That's what they wanted the Wii U to be. It's clearly the Switch is what they wanted the Wii U to be.
And they were in a bind. I think the Wii's popularity, like, from, I would say, 2009 to 2011, when the Wii U was unveiled.
Yeah.
Because it didn't come out until 2012.
Right.
In that two-year span, the popularity of the Wii just started to nosedive in a way that I don't think anybody saw coming.
Yeah.
I mean, to the point where, you know, when the Kinect and the Move came out for Sony and Microsoft, respectively, you know, it was already people going like, are you sure this is a good idea?
Yeah.
Did you wait too long?
Yeah.
Do people want to move or connect anymore?
Yeah.
And it was a strange abandonment.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is due to Nintendo not policing what was released on their system anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like, there were shovelware after shovelware after shovelware. Mm-hmm. And I don't blame them for allowing a lot of that in the door.
Yeah.
And the reason that that happens is that ever since the Super Nintendo, with their bad licensing and all that other stuff, nobody wanted to make games for the N64.
Right.
A lot of companies didn't want to make games for the GameCube.
Right.
And then when everybody showed up at their door and said, we want to make games for you, they're like, fuck yes! And they started throwing $100 bills in the air.
Yeah, yeah.
And, well, the problem was, too many people who went out and bought the system, like, your grandmother bought a Wii.
Mm-hmm.
And she probably bought Wii Fit.
Yeah.
But she also probably bought, like, four or five other games, like Chicken Shoot.
Carnival
games. And we're like, everything else in the system is garbage.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it wasn't a... you know, a very policed environment.
Yeah.
There was no way for the average consumer...
Redneck Olympics and garbage like that.
You know? Yeah, there was no way for the most...
Yeah.
A system designed for the casualist of the casuals to actually find what the good casual stuff was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of what doomed them there.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Game Boy Advance, you know, a system that I've said this entire episode is arguably the greatest handheld of all time, was also no stranger to shovelware. That's where the Game Boy Player cartridges came from.
Yeah.
They had, like, episodes of SpongeBob SquarePants and shit.
Yep.
And there were, like, so many terrible movie games.
Yeah.
So many terrible... This was back in the era of every movie that had a family appeal had a goddamn game for it, and they put it on 9 consoles.
Yeah, and even, like, beyond that, like, I remember Mission Impossible games being on it.
Oh, yeah.
Like that. It's like, good God, you know? Just bad stuff. Yeah, no, you got to make sure the stuff coming out for your game is you got to make sure your library is at least at the very least what 70% quality, like quality gaming. Like, if you're at like 60, you're in trouble. I think if you got 40% shovelware garbage, like,
It's the thing I'm worried about with the Switch's store.
Oh, yeah?
It's getting impossible for me as an informed consumer to show up and go, oh, what's new? Well, I don't care about that new stuff. What's the good new stuff?
What's the good new stuff?
Yeah. So basically everything I bought for my Switch digitally in the last couple of months is based on, like, recommendations from people I know, because you can't shop that store.
Right, yeah.
There's too much stuff in it. There's every Tuesday, there's 100 games that come out.
Yeah.
And I've never fucking heard of any of them because they're all phone ports. It's all just, it's bullshit.
Yeah, they need to stop that. Yeah, man, you start seeing those dollar signs, you start throwing out all you can.
Well, it's
seeing, you know, just sapping up the pennies.
You want good developers to know we have an open door policy here for independent developers.
Yes.
The problem is that you let the good cockroach in the door, and then all the assholes show up.
You let in Ori and the Blind Forest, and all of a sudden,
if that was on the Switch, that'd be so good.
Right.
Microsoft's got that all locked up.
Yeah, you get that in the door, then all of a sudden, Coinware Bejeweled 5043 gets in there for some reason.
They're so bad. We'll end the episode with one thing that I bought that I forgot to mention.
Yeah.
I've actually kickstarted something. The first thing I've kickstarted in like 7 years.
Oh, wow.
And it will show up this October, and I'm so excited about it.
What is that?
It's going to show up right around my birthday.
Nice.
And it's a little present to myself. That was $12. You can still buy this thing.
Mm.
Just look for the Flip Grip for the Switch.
Flip Grip for the Switch.
Yes.
Okay.
The Flip Grip. There's a whole bunch of retro arcade games that have been released for the Switch.
Yes. The
that are for vertical monitors.
Oh, okay. I see.
So what this does is it's a grip that the Joy-Con slide onto, and you put the Switch in it vertically. And a lot of those games actually have vertical monitor support.
Right, and it'll flip
so
for
you're
it.
Playing, like, Punch-Out for the arcade. Was
nice.
That two-monitor
game?
Yeah,
the two-monitor game.
You're playing
it
through aspect ratio.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Huh. I love it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
The Flip Grip.
Flip Grip.
That thing seems fucking awesome because there's already, like, 25 or 30 arcade games that work with it.
Yeah.
And then there's a bunch more coming out.
You get all the Neo Geo games that come out on a regular basis.
Like in Raiden Fighter Shooter and all that stuff.
Is Mark of the Wolf out yet?
I think Mark of the Wolves is out.
I gotta check that out. I was gonna get Mark of the Wolf if it wasn't out yet. So, but yeah, that's cool. I love that. Flip Grip. Go check that out on Kickstarter. Probably has the online store up there as well.
They're no longer taking money on Kickstarter, but you can. It's like a dollar more than it was on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
If you buy it from the online store for things. But if you look up Flip Grip, you'll end up finding this thing.
Nice.
It's very cool. It's actually the guys that do the Retronauts podcast, Jeremy Parrish.
Oh, cool, yeah.
He came up with this idea back when the Switch was announced. He's like, why can't I hold it like this? Then we can play real arcade games. And he kept talking about it. And this company contracted him and said, like,
hey,
can we make that thing?
It's like, you want to talk about this and make it a thing?
That'd it was a successful Kickstarter, and I can't wait to get the damn thing. But
very
that's
cool. Awesome.
All I have to say for the day.
Well, that's going to be it then, guys. That's it.
No more talk.
No more talking. I'm not talking.
No more questions.
No more questions. I'm sorry about that. Oh, man. Oh, did you see that clip? One little bit of wrestling. Did you see that clip? Oh, you're not on Facebook anymore.
No. Nope.
I posted a clip of it was when I stopped watching. It was when I stopped watching WCW, and they were just on the edge of, like, going out. It was the Natural Born Thrillers. It was Mean Gene talking to him, and he's just completely, like, verbally abusing them. It's the best thing in the world. Like, it's the best thing ever.
You need
to
find a link to that.
Oh, man, I got to show you to it. It's so good. I would talk, blow it out your ass, O'Hare. Like, it's great. It's so good. Oh, man. All right, but that's it for this episode of the Video Start Podcast. Check us out at VideoDestruct.com and DestinationComics.com/DNN and our SoundCloud episode and all that stuff. You can check us out on Facebook at VideoDestruct and on Twitter at VideoDestruct. And you can also
follow me on Twitter at Hoss_buddy. That's HOSS_BUDDY. I talk to wrestlers and talk about video games and how good the G1 is. Yeah. If you're into New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Pro Wrestling.
G1 Climax is coming to an end right now. And, it's so good.
Climax. Yep.
Yeah, I just climaxed all over my
G1. Oh, no. Anyway, that's going to do it, guys. We'll see you later. Run out of time. We're going to go.
Fuck.
Thank you for listening, DNN.